find the duck. The honorable member.
Can we propose this meeting to have a presentation, a briefing by the Small Enterprise Finance Agency on its 2017-2018 third quarter annual performance report? The same also applies to the Small Enterprise Development Agency. We will now give an opportunity to the department, the minister. Oh, the apologies first. Oh, and thereafter to the minister. It is also under apology, Chairperson, if we have ESAT cluster starting at 11, so I would have to leave to that meeting, but also the DG will have to leave a little bit early than normal, because we have to deal with the budget vote, but also the other thing that we need to do for the whole meeting. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, it's not an apology, it's just a point of order, if I may. It's about Vodacom and the diesel company. If we can just make sure that there's a definite date in the near future, so that we can get Vodacom and Ericsson here, so that we can sort out that situation. Because it's not about the company itself. I think it's about Vodacom and Ericsson that promised Parliament to solve the problem, and they never solved the problem. And small businesses, apparently, that in Vodacom's tactics to prolong a case as long as possible, and small businesses can't, you know, financially they can't just keep up, and then eventually small business close, and then of course the problem is gone. So if we can just today make sure that we can fix a date so that Vodacom and Ericsson can come and explain why they didn't solve that problem. Thank you.
Can we deal with the apology first and then come back to that?
Thank you, Chair. The Deputy Minister has already started at the Cabinet Committee at 8:30.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honorable members, morning DG, Minister in DG, and the Chairperson. Chairperson, I've got an apology for Mr. Bewa, who firstly went to a dentist, and then also I got an apology from Reverend Mishwe, and then I also received an apology from Bakapa of requesting to leave earlier before the meeting adjourns. And then those are the apologies, and Mrs. Ntim. And then I'll also just want to extend the apology on the side of the Secretariat of the venue. Our problem in Parliament is scrambled for land. So most committees are sitting. So what we did, we had a smaller venue than this one, which accommodates only 20 people. So that is why then we opted to try and swap with other committees to get a little bit bigger one, since their meeting was supposed to adjourn at half past 9. So I'd like to extend that apology. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to honorable members and the minister and the department. Chairperson, I am debating this afternoon, so I'll ask to be excused early, around 12:30.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm on the same predicament like the honorable member. I want to debate. I will request to be released at 12:30 also.
Honorable member.
Thank you very much, colleague chair. Good morning to everybody. I wish colleague chair that noting the apologies that are being rendered, that we try to efficiently and effectively run over the issues so that we don't, by the time we lose people, we are close to finishing. Thanks, colleague chair.
All apologies accepted.
I move we accept the apologies.
Can we then address just three issues before we take the presentation? On the issue raised by Honorable Kruger, that is work in progress. The issue of Vodacom and Ericsson, it actually falls under bullying of big companies who are bullying and marginalizing small companies. Members will remember that when we started with that process, it wasn't very much clear as to why we were discussing that. But as time went on and we got in and we were approached by many small businesses, it became clear in our minds that there was a need for this committee to engage on that matter with a view of finding a lasting solution of maybe having a structure in place that would deal with such matters. And I remember in one of the meetings we even talked about a structure similar to the small business called CLAIL to address such issues. So it's work in progress. After the budget review, after the budget vote, we will then review our program to try and bring forward those issues so that we can move with speed in finalizing how the committee would want to see those issues tackled moving forward. Then I also picked up on the report that of the portfolio committee that there was a paragraph that was talking about the minister not having attended the briefing and the deputy minister having left before the conclusion of the briefing. And when I looked at that, I also remember that I wasn't here when those presentations were made, but I am not reflected in the report of the person who was not here. And in fairness, that should not have been part of the report because it has got nothing to do with the report. It creates an impression that there were people that were supposed to be here who were not here, and it was not known where they were. And I would want to address that as a matter of principle and also as a concern that when we adopted the report as a portfolio committee, we focused more on the observations and recommendations and not the first part of the report. Had we seen that, we would have corrected that before the report was submitted to appear on the ATC. It's now a public document. And the reason I'm raising that is that our meetings are recorded, mm-hmm. and our meetings are also are for public consumption, so that we correct that, that in future there is no need to say so-and-so came in a meeting and left at a particular time and so-and-so was not in, because if it was a requirement, it should have also been mentioned that I was not part of the, I wasn't chairing the meeting on that day when the presentations were made, and when the first draft was also discussed of the report, I was not in the, it's not reflected in the report. So let us treat each other with the respect and also not produce the report in such a manner that would be perceived as witch hunting. I just want to end there. The third issue that I want to report on is that the House Chairperson has come back to me on the issue of the forensic audit that the committee resolved to do, needing to be capacitated by the Office of the Auditor General. The report is that the House Chairperson has written to the Office of the Auditor General, because there is now money available to assist us to do that, and has asked them to conduct, the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, so that a meeting can be facilitated where the committee would then discuss with the Office of the Auditor General the terms of reference in relation to that forensic audit. So those are the three issues that I wanted to deal with before I then give to the minister an opportunity to lead the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Considering also the fact that the time is running so fast, I wouldn't want to make long political statements. Safe to say that in the process of our work, we have tried as a department and the agencies to work with each other as closely as possible, speak to each other much more often, see the challenges and try and address them as quickly as possible. I think that obviously this meeting is for purposes of the oversight. So I will leave the presentation, I will leave to yourself, Chairperson, so that the presentations can be done. And what I think I might want to do, if it is possible, depending on the other side, is to come back as quickly as I can, so at least to be part and parcel of the discussions thereafter. But it will depend on the agenda on the other side. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you. DG, are you handing over to the chair of the board?
Yes.
Okay. Chairperson of the Board of SIFA.
Thank you, Chair. If you can go straight to the presentation, I'll just give highlights of the presentation, and then the CEO will go to the rest of the presentation. In terms of the results that we're presenting for quarter three, we will note that in the annexure, what page is it? In the annexure to the presentation, which is slide 25 and 26, it gives a consolidated view of the quarter three performance, and it also reflects the year-to-date comparison December 2017. You will note that there is a mixed set of results in terms of performance, where, for example, in respect of developmental targets, we've done fairly well. I'll come to the challenges or areas where we did not perform well. The turnaround times, in terms of the time we consider and approve, has improved. the level of disbursement has improved and also the increasing level of collections. However, there were challenges in terms of approvals. As you can see, the level of approvals, the number of SMEs and cooperatives reached, extension of services and loans to the youth, and people with disabilities. But you will note that at year end, there were improvements in terms of the number of SMEs and cooperatives that were reached. But mainly the reason for the reduced level of approvals really had to do with organizational efficiencies within IFAS. You will note that there were high levels of impairments and reduced level of collections year on year, which meant that it was affecting the financial status of IFA, and as a result, issues of sustainability, which really forced the institution to review its lending practices. In effect, there was a new credit policy that was approved, which now focuses the institution on risk-mitigated transactions, so as to balance the issue of impairments and improvements in collections. We also had to deepen the skills around due diligence and risk assessment and so on. So there was a consolidation of lending practices, which then meant that there was a reduction in approvals in view of the financial sustainability of the organization. Hence, if you look at the annual performance plan for the current financial year, you will note that we've started for the first time to dip into the loan provided by ICC because of the financial sustainability and the financial status of SIFA. And I think in the period under review leading up to the financial year, and there is now realignment in terms of the work of the department and so on. So that's where I'll end my comments and highlights, Chair, and I will hand over to the CEO for the detail of the presentation.
Honorable Chairperson, members and the Minister. My apology, I just taken off my... Usually when I present, my jacket is on. Because of the heat, I just take it off, Chair. So my apology for not being as formal as I should be. Okay, I'll start on page 6 of the present of the presentation, which deals with the loan book performance as a whole, and the chair as indicated, just to dwell on quarter 3, we anticipated to have approved a transaction to the value of 201 million, and we did 92 million, and for the reason that the chair highlighted, in particular, looking at the wholesale side of the business, as you see when I unpack it, where the lending activities has reduced significantly as compared to the previous year. At the same time, compared to what we anticipated to have approved year on year. And then,
okay, thanks, sir. My apologies to interject while you are on. I believe we are getting a report of 18 April 2018. See, that's because the slide behind the chair was saying 26, or maybe you have just updated the dates. Just took the date up front at the computer.
No. The report that we are getting is the third quarter report, which represents October to December 2017.
Yeah, thanks. I thought maybe it could be described as such, because behind you, you can't just see. There is no linkage into what it is right here.
Okay.
He can go back and show you. deities, you can check your page. Maybe okay. They just changed the date.
Yes, yeah. In fact, we were supposed to be here
previously.
Okay. Let me deal with that. On my report, it's written 18 because we had invited them to present here on the 18th. But then they had prepared that report knowing that immediately after the end of the third quarter, they get ready to come here. So it means on that day, that's when they produce that report, getting them to come here. But I do take your point that the date on which it's presented should reflect today. It's not a big trans mess.
It's not a trans mess. We were supposed to come here much earlier, and then we couldn't. And then the priority was on APP at the time. But I think the date on the cover, the report, they will also follow the report that is submitted on the page. But more or less the same. It's got the same report. Yeah. Okay. So. Thank you, Chair. So I was still saying that the overall loan book activities was lower than anticipated. A number of reasons that the Chair also highlighted, because at the time we were making sure that at least let's put a certain aspects of the business in order. We normally get more business activities on the wholesale side. Particularly when we engage with let's say financial institution on the Kula Credit Guarantee, our insurance company, where in certain instances, as I said, banks require larger facilities if a capital structure is insufficient. What one is trying to say there is that where banks require maybe lending of about, let's say, 100 million or 50 million, etc., we gave them a bit lower, and some of them, they felt that they don't want to take up that. It's a way for us to say, let us try to allocate the capital as much as we can. So that is that really the reason on the overall performance. The next slide relates specifically to the area of direct lending. You'll see quarter three direct lending has done better than quarter two. 62 million have been approved in direct lending in quarter three as against the target of 48 million 600 in terms of the funding activities during the quarter, of which the 29 SMMEs have been supported, and we believe that has facilitated 477,000 jobs as a result of our funding. We have a target that we call it the productive sector of the economy. This is just to help us to say, let us not only concentrate on the services type of the industry, we try to support those productive sectors that have got ability to create more jobs. So 45% of the approvals in direct lending were in those productive sector of the economy. And then if we flip to the next slide, it then just give us the activities on the wholesale lending. As I said, the wholesale lending activities has not been much during the quarter under review. 30 million against 129 million have been approved in the quarter. For a variety of reasons. Some of the lessons learned, particularly in some of our funding activities, we decided to say, let us relook and reflect, particularly in some of the lessons learned around, the committee will remember the funding activities we did to super grand cooperative project in Mpumalanga. And we said, let us reflect and see what is it that went wrong out of the transaction, what is it that we need to put in place in terms of our systems and controls in the organization. So we decided to focus more time to make sure that let's put our house in order, because we realize in particular that we're working in silos, in a silo way for cooperatives it won't work. Hence the need for us to collaborate with others, particularly the local economic development, CEDA, and the Department of Small Business Development, amongst others. So those are really the factors that resulted in us not doing well in so far as the approvals are concerned in the wholesale business. But in so far, which is like number 9, in so far as disbursements are concerned, we have done well on the disbursements. Just to illustrate, disbursements is the money that comes from the fiscal that is circulating in the economy. To what extent has that money been rolled out to support small enterprises? So we had a target for 172 million. We have disbursed 173 million for the quarter under review. And you could see by the end of December, we have already exceeded the target in terms of the disbursement is concerned. We had a target of 645 million, and then we're sitting at 885 million already by the end of December. For me, it is crucial when look at both the approvals and disbursements, because disbursements translate to the money that has gone into the economy to help small businesses. Approvals, yes, it gives us no. Yes, you have approved the transaction. Once terms are met, you need to make sure that you disburse. So the impact in the economy so far as the money is disbursed from the organizations concerned, it's as a result of the disbursements, which we believe that this is a critical element. If one is to compare between the disbursements and approval, which one has got bigger weight in terms of the impact. The next slide then just give on the direct lending side, when you look at the disbursement side, direct lending we see at 61%, which translates to disbursement of 26.7 million vis-a-vis the target of 45 million as at the end of December last year. So the subsequent slide just now try to break down in terms of activities and the disbursements on the wholesale side. You will see in terms of wholesale business, we have got what we call wholesale SMEs, where the target was 148 million and we disbursed 296 million. Chair, we haven't done well at all insofar as cooperatives area is concerned, for the reason that I just mentioned. We were targeting to disburse for the quarter 25.3 million, only disbursed a mere 2.5 million. In the stretch of the retail financial intermediaries and the credit indemnities, the target was 49 million, we disbursed 26.7 million. We have got this product that we call supplier credit, where we assist small businesses who want either to acquire or to get a level of credit from corporates. It's a new product that we have launched a few years ago. The target was 26 million, we have disbursed 69 million. To the micro enterprises, particularly the informal sector, which is the biggest from impact perspective, we have targeted 87.4 million, we have disbursed 166 million. So we have exceeded the target significantly in that area. So now, what is it that the money that has gone into the economy has done from a developmental perspective for the quarter? You'll see in slide number 13 for quarter 3, performance against target. Number of SMEs, as the chair indicated earlier, we're sitting at 43%. At the end of Q3, however, it's indicated by year end, if you add all the other quarters, in particular quarter 4, we have done well in the number of SME and cooperatives, so as the jobs that have been facilitated. So year to date, in terms of the numbers, at the end of December, we're sitting at 115%. In other words, more than 15% above the target. And the jobs at the end of the quarter three year to date, we're sitting at 87%. And insofar as the targeted goals are concerned, the slide number 14, if you have to take into account quarter three. For young people, we targeted to have disbursed 50.5 million. We disbursed 19.3 million. Insofar as the priority provinces, 75.6 million target, and we disbursed 63 million. And then women, 41 million achieved against target of 75 million. And then black-owned, at the end of the period, we wanted to have disbursed 84 million, we did 117 million. And then in terms of township, 9.6 million against 42 million. Entrepreneurs with disability, we had a target of 4.2 million in terms of disbursements for the quarter. We disbursed just over 4 million. The area, the next slide just now illustrates in terms of what we call the portfolio at risk, take into account the level of the book that we have and which portfolio is at risk, meaning those loans that are outstanding for 60 days plus. You see in terms of our book, which incorporates the both wholesale and direct lending, we have booked at the end of December of 1.6 billion, of which 879 million is portfolio at risk, meaning that there are loans on those that are over a period of 60 days in arrears. The breakdown did indicate that the majority of the loans that are in arrears are those that are much older book. In other words, one has to look at the older book, the book before 2016. 180 plus, the significant portion of that was sitting at 86% in terms of more than 180 days in terms of the level of the book. So you will see the next slide, which is slide number 17, then illustrates the wholesale portfolio. I must say that the 608 total balance of the book excludes portfolios in the joint ventures and the shares, as well as other investments. For example, the investment that we have in the likes of business partners and other shareholding are not included. This is more the loan portion of the book. So you will notice that the wholesale book is at the level of portfolio at risk is only sitting at about 22% as at the end of December. And then if you go to the next slide, which is slide number 18, again in terms of portfolio at risk, for direct lending is sitting at about 76%. This means that direct lending is high risk in terms of repayability by our clients as compared to the wholesale lending portfolio in terms of the activities. And largely on the bridging loans, which some of them are historically relating to where we didn't have sessions of contracts, where we have given loans to entrepreneurs who for a number of reasons, either are able to pay us because the business didn't do well, or they were unable to pay us because they have been paid and utilized funding for other purposes. So that is the biggest challenge that we face. Again, this relates to the historical book, the book in the earlier years of the organization, where I indicated earlier that that's the book that is above over a period of 80 days. But in terms of the collection, where we are seeing now, there is a significant level of activities around the collection. We anticipated to collect, for example, for the quarter, you have to look from October, month to month. October, we anticipated to collect 26 million, we collected 36 million. November, 28 million odd, and then we collected 24 million. And then in December, 37 million, we collected 30. So all in all, for the whole quarter, in terms of the collection, we anticipated to collect 91.6 million, and then we collected about just under 91.4 1.1 million. So this illustrates that there are, in terms of collection activities, there has been more concerted effort for the organization to say, let's collect all the monies that have been owed us for a longer period of time, and whatever that we have learned recently, we should collect. So, I could see now the version on the, let's just follow the book, the version that we have on the slides has also included some additional slides. But let's go to what we presented, slide number 21, from a financial perspective. At the end of December, year to date, from an income point of view, we budgeted to receive income year to date of 186 million. We have achieved 155 million, which is 14%, which is 14% higher than what we anticipated. You will see that the concerted effort, while we have not done a lot in terms of lending and activities, but we have contained impairment significantly in terms of the movement of impairment year on year for the period under review. We have budgeted an impairment of 59 million. We have received impairment of 14.9 million, which is so a significant improvement. The lower the level of movement, the better the level of our impairment. Personnel expenses in terms of cost containment, we're looking at 153 million by this time. We have managed to save, and then we have, at the end of December, the personnel expenses were sitting at 132 million. The area of concern was more on other operating expenses, where we were anticipating 116 million in terms of the budget. Our cost associated with other operating expenses shoot to 174 million. That is largely due to our property expenses, as we have indicated when we presented our APPs or corporate plan, that the properties, we make more losses in terms of the expenses associated with our old properties compared to the revenue that we generate from the rental income, and as a result of that, that has impacted on our operating income. Sitting at, if you look at net operating income, taking into account the MTF allocation, we budgeted a loss by this time. However, because of the cost containment and improvement in the income level, we're sitting at a profit of 1.4 million at the end of December. So the next slide, which is slide 22, just really encapsulates what I've just spoken about relating to the financial performance. So one will see that, yes, the measures that we put in place are beginning to bear fruit. While they are giving us a little bit less activities in terms of their funding due to lower level of approvals, but in terms of bringing the healthiness of the book, or of the organization, that helps. Because if you see cost to income ratio, for example, we at a target of 100%, that's where we are. That's where we are sitting at the end of December last year. Just in conclusion, as the chair has indicated, it has been very challenging for us. It's really more of a balancing act for the organization. Just to indicate that. How can we balance by making sure we still support SMEs, cooperatives, we still approve and disperse, but at the same time we need to make sure that we put our house order for the future to make sure that as we kick in the 2019 financial year, all our activities, our systems, our controls are in place for us to be able to improve our funding activities. And we also identify that there is a need for us to continue to have a strategic partnership that will help us to bring quality transaction to the book. I always say to my team in various offices that we shouldn't rather wait. We mustn't wait for clients to walk into our doors. We need to go out there and identify opportunities. And those opportunities we can fund them, particularly from strategic partnerships. I've already had discussions with the CEOs of state-owned entities, I met with the CEO of Telkom a few weeks ago, the CEO of SAA, CEO of Post Office and the Post Bank, to look at the way that we can collaborate together to make sure that we identify opportunities that they have for small businesses, and then we then come as from a lending point of view. And the meeting is set to engage with the CEO of the Post Company. So, Chair, that is really the conclusion. I wouldn't go to the balance scorecard that the Chair has highlighted earlier. So that is our presentation for the quarter ending December 2017. Chair, thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much. We will then move to the next presentation and then have discussions.
While it's been the set up, Comrade Chair, while things are being set up, I know that paper is expensive and ink is expensive, but because these papers are meant to communicate, the way if the written letters are so small that they can hardly be read, then, you know, we lose the purpose. So if that can be thought so that, you know, it is value for money. I don't have to refer to specific pages. I assume you are with me if I'm looking at the last page. of the presentation we were just getting, the balance scorecard. So I think this remark should relate to all presentations. Let's avoid testing the health of the eyes.
I just want to comment on that. I think it's also the if you print it as a portrait, it becomes small. But if it's printed in landscape, this format, it becomes bigger. I'm not sure how it is printed. So when it's printed on this one, that is landscape.
Landscape is better.
I'm not sure on somewhere to yours is also in this format. I think it must be on portrait.
Landscape. Mine is landscape.
That's too small. Yeah.
Landscape.
It will be too small if it's printed that. If it's printed that way, Not the one who sent it to the printer.
The one who set up the printer.
Somebody tried to save the paper at the expense of our eyes.
Yeah.
Not taking into consideration the age.
The age, yeah.
So can those be considered in the future? No,
are
no longer young.
Yeah.
Part of the age.
Is it possible that we can start using the hard copy?
I'm changing my documents, but I'm doing technical assistance in Canada.
So
we can start working.
Honorable Chair, members of the portfolio committee, today, we're here to present the set for the report. I have with me Mandy for the CEO as well as our CFO. Norman will also take you through the financials. I think the rising talk has just mentioned that all statutory requirements that we need to meet in terms of our meetings and reporting have been done on time, and all reporting to the portfolio committee as well have been attended to. This is taking into consideration all compliance requirements that have been met. On the performance front, I think what I need to mention is that we consistently have meetings with the minister on a quarterly basis to look at the performance of CEDA, but also to get inputs on policy methods, and for us also to give inputs to the minister of how what we think based on the environment that we're working on. So that work has been most useful in also trying to provide the minister with what is happening on the ground. And hopefully that might eventually have an impact on further policy work going forward in the small business area. I just need to mention that from our side, it's quite obvious the requirements that small businesses are supposed to provide for the growth of the country really makes them a key asset in the country. And it would be of great value for us to actually elevate small business not as being crucial, but to be a national asset. And that might overhaul the whole policy framework into looking how collectively we make sure that small business become the backbone for business, for economic development in the country. So those are some of the discussions that we do hold in trying to advance the idea of how best we can actually approach collectively the issue of Yes, we also adopted the balance scorecard, thanks to Mr. Makuba, who showed us how well it works with CIFA. And for us, key reason for doing this is that as a service organization, it's one thing to chase the job, but people have to know how to chase the job. So if we do not look at strengthening the organization to deliver what they need to do, then we might still be failing in reaching our targets because we do not have the right competence. So our financial card looks more at operational excellence on how well we deliver onto the members and measuring that for nothing in our business. Looking at third quarter performance, we had 27 strategic objectives that we needed to meet, of which we only managed to do a good job at 24. We did not do well on three, and this is office and finance. Looking at improving cost efficiencies for the organization, we wanted to implement activity-based costs to improve cost efficiency. And the challenge there was that when we looked around and we put it up to 10, we could not find people can actually provide.
Thanks, Chair.
Yeah.
While the presentation is okay, if you would guide us, right, slide, page.
I'm just giving background. I just
We have not done.
Yeah, no. I'm just giving the background so that you understand. So, apologies. I should have made you aware. I'm saying, but what I'm talking about is on there. We had 27 strategic objectives that we wanted to meet, of which we did not meet three. And these are of great concern.
If I can add this slide, it corresponds to what Chair is talking about in the slide 12.
Okay.
The slide that I'm showing is
let us clarify what is happening here. When Sefa was presenting, the chair of the board gave an overview, which was not in the slide. She was presenting what is happening in the organization from the governance perspective. The same is happening with CEDA. The chair of the board is presenting that. After he has done that, then the CEO will present to us.
So maybe just to make you aware, I'm just giving an overview of what didn't work, which may not be in depth in the presentation. Even more data to that. What didn't work well was us implementing activity-based costing. And we have challenges there with tenders. We had to go back to tender several times looking for the right service provider. This was one. The second one had to do with the whole issue of employee satisfaction. How satisfied are the people with their jobs and being a skiller? We still need to do a little bit of work there because we wanted a satisfaction level of 4 out of 5, and we got a satisfaction level of 2.9. So our corporate services is going to look at the people because they are the one who drives sales delivery at the end of the day. And the third one had to do with the percentage of people employed with disability. Now that is always a challenge of meeting the quotas for people with disability. We had put a target of 2, of which we are now at 1.6. So there's a lot of work that we're actually engaged in making sure that we actually make up on this part of the system. Now allow the CEO to give you the final detail on the preference.
Thank you. Before the CEO continues, I just want to make a positive comment about CEDA. The chairperson introduced in his introductory remarks, he made mention of the fact that CEDA is represented by the chair of the board, the CEO, and the CFO. I want to make this observation that when in an organization, the CFO does not appear as a portfolio, does not appear in the presentations that are being made by that entity, whether it is the department or CEDA or CEFA. The eyes of the portfolio committee must begin to be wide open to say, why is the master lock of an organization not appearing as CFO? When information is being hidden in terms of how finances are being managed, SAFO will not be part of the presentation. That must begin to indicate that there is a problem. An organization that brings both the CEO and the CFO is an organization that is transparent about how finances are being used. I just wanted to make that observation. Thank you for doing that.
Apologies, I did not introduce my team. CIFA does have the CFO present as part of the delegation, but I missed the introducer.
No. I was not being specific to CIFA. I was saying that the eyes of the portfolio committee must be wide open. As soon as the two most important people do not appear in front of the portfolio committee, it's an indication of something that is being hidden. If there is nothing hidden, both the CEO and the CFO will appear in front of the portfolio committee. If it is the department, both the DG and the CFO will appear in front of the portfolio committee. If one of them doesn't appear, particularly the padlock, the CFO, it must begin to ring in your mind that something is fishing. It may indicate that there is disagreement in terms of how the monies are shifted within the organization or how the monies are managed. Because the CFO will not agree. That is the person in an organization that says no in most cases when money is being shifted around. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to all the members. I will start from performance information slides, as I'm showing in relation to the printed copies you have. From here, perhaps it is just to mention that in this report, if there is something that we might not have lifted out, let me indicate to the members that the work that we are doing in our comprehensive detailed report for the quarter and for the year, it seeks to make sure that as the organization we continuously improve in appealing and responding to the needs of our stakeholders in improving our financial health as the organization, as well as improving our internal processes and capacity, primarily on the latter, to make sure that we increase our service access to the crisis and we improve our integration in terms of management of the network that we have of the 64 incubators that we support and the branches that we have across the country, and as well as looking at the skills of our people internally, in particular focusing on the ability and capabilities of our business advisors. Of course, we are pulling this together in terms of what the minister is looking at whenever it's engaging with the board. Something that we could say is happening very well. Quarterly, the minister is meeting with the board, and there are set time and milestones in terms of what should be achieved by the organization as measured through the shareholder compact. And of course, we are, as I mentioned, looking at those other components in terms of skills. We are to mention the work that we have done in this particular quarter. We have been working greatly with the CETAs in particular as well, the services CETA and the PCETA. On the PCETA area, it's where we were also looking at the framework that will ensure that there is a proper qualifications learning metrics for our business advisors. We are also looking at ensuring that we do not fall short in terms of providing access to our entrepreneurs out there by continuously looking at means of expanding our network, despite the fact that as CEDA we have limitations in terms of internal resources, but in this particular quarter three, we have done well in terms of expanding through the co-location points, and I think the province, I can say it has done this with excellence, is the Mpumalanga province, where we have seen more than 10 co-location points being created. We are as well looking at the cooperative's work. I think I can even fast forward beyond this quarter and say, as I am wrapping the report for the year, we've seen us reaching out to about 912 to 15 cooperatives, which was greatly work primarily done in the first three quarters. So I am talking to the figure as towards the year end. Of course, we are looking at the support in terms of technology assistance to our entrepreneurs, which combines the technology transfer funds that we administer, as well as the quality and standard services to the entrepreneurs. In this quarter that we are reporting at, I can even single out the partnership that we have reached with the Export Credit Insurance Company in terms of its IC, where through them we have even managed to get additional funds that will contribute towards our technology transfer program. Of course, in terms of value-adding partnerships, we have seen partnerships with the other departments, finding value in working with CEDA in developing their enterprise support programs.
Slide one.
The private sector, the nine. Slide is slide nine. Yes, oh. Okay, slide nine. Where we are working with other partners in the private sector as well. In this quarter, I can mention that we have been working with places like Woolworths, Pick and Pay, some mines as well. Of course, we are trying our best in terms of coordination of our work to ensure that we are measuring what is happening across the network. And this, in this quarter, we have been looking at our internal systems, in particular our ICT system. And of course, finally, as I talk to the issue of financial resources, in this quarter we have been working hard in terms of sorting ourselves internally towards verification as we are pursuing to get a formal accreditation or rating in terms of the BEE requirements. Moving to the next slide, which is slide 11, on the administration side, I can mention that the bottom row there, that we have been doing our best to cap the vacancy rate. When we closed the year, the previous financial year, we closed the year with about 15% vacancy rate, and as at the time of this report, quarter three, we were at about 5% vacancy rate. On slide 12, Chairperson has talked to this slide in his openings when he was talking to the indicators and the performance against these indicators, and he highlighted the three areas at which we didn't do well in this quarter. He has already unpacked that, so I will not get into that detail. But the next slide, slide 13, if I just relate the performance of the programs, as we have three programs within CEDA, which is the Enterprise Development Support Program, or Enterprise Development Program, which is the program that is running across the network of branch offices that we have There we met our indicators in terms of school achievement thereof, and in terms of budget as well. We fairly spent the money that was allocated to that program, given that for that point in year, budget-wise focus, we had 312 million budgeted, and we spent about 306 of that. The technology transfer program as well there, we met our targets in terms of the targets in the APP, as well the variance budget-wise. It's a variance that has been created greatly by timelines in terms of when we are supposed to disperse the funds to the incubators that we are assisting. Some incubators had fallen short in terms of their requirements to meet for us to release the funds, but towards the year, those have been sorted out. So all in all, where there have been a bit of unmet targets, it's only on the administration side. Moving to the next slide, looking at the throughput of our work, starting with people that we are reaching out to the point in time of reporting, CEDA Network had reached out to about 43,000 people. The conversion rate in terms of those that become CEDA clients is now registered in CEDA Book. It's about 26,000. For this year only, these figures, they speak to the this year only. Number of clients that we have registered for long-term interventions, interventions for more than 6 months, as an example, it's about 9,000 people, and of course, number of clients working with, those are clients that we call, they are on our client journey, so they would be supported for a period of a year to 3 years, as an example, that is about 6,000 people. Specifics, quarterly targets, I've already indicated targets have been fairly met in this quarter. July to September is targeted in terms of number of SMEs accessing CEDA services. We have met 2,500 and in terms of cooperatives, we have met 171, which was just for this particular quarter. But I must indicate that when we are talking cooperatives, there is information that is hidden there in terms of us now talking to cooperatives here, as and when we are already beginning to spend some money on cooperatives. Though there is some project work that is not showing in these numbers, as work that is done by our regional facilitators, where they begin to do project facilitation, whether working with the municipalities or working with some community groups out there. Number of people supported through technology support there, we are looking at a number above our target, and I must indicate that this number does not include work that is reported in our work under cooperative support, sorry, under technology transfer support, which relates to the work that was done towards the end of this quarter, preparing ourselves for the implementation of the IMEDP, which is a program that we assisted the department with its implementation towards the end of quarter three and into the fourth quarter of the year. Collocation points, as I have indicated, we again they met our targets, and as I said, mainly that was coming from Mpumalanga province. We have as well, moving to the next slide, activated our mobile units. At one stage we had some mobile units on slide 16 that we had some challenges with in making them operational. But now we have regained a plan to say how we are going to make use of these mobile units. to mention as well, in this order, we have been working with the National Gazelles Program, and this is the quarter at which we began to plan our arrangements to take the program in-house, preparing for the end of the agreement with the then outsourced project management unit. Now, from this financial year, the program will be managed in-house. Of course, in this quarter, we have seen ourselves as well taking a number of intraplans to outside missions, participating in some global initiatives in terms of sector fairs or trade fairs. And finally, from these highlights, I think I can just mention, moving to the next slide, that this is the quarter we also launched some rapid in terms of our incubation centers that are in the Tivens. We have two, one that was launched in the Tivens, and one which is a high-tech center that has been launched here in the Western Cape. Chairperson did speak to these areas of concern, so I will skip this slide. A client demographics, maybe let me use the narrative of this slide for clarity. The slide, in terms of client demographics, just tells the number of intrapreneurs and unbundling the numbers I talked to before and showing the spread of those numbers per province. But with specific reference to the target groups, we are greatly reaching out to black intrapreneurs, and we are fairly stable in a range of 47%, sometimes touching 49% in terms of outreach to women and youth. We are pulling hard to improve in the area of people with disabilities, but we have recently signed some agreements with some organizations that we believe in this financial year will assist us to improve in this area. Sectors, the intrapreneurs that we are finding in our group, they are greatly in the services sector, in the manufacturing sector, followed by agriculture and agro-processing, as well as construction. Those are the dominating sectors in the work that we are doing. And sometimes up and down is a wholesale and retail sector. Profile of the client interventions, if one is asking us what are we assisting these intrapreneurs with, we are tracking this in all our reports, and we are all the time trying to see what stays on top in terms of our range of services and on-demand, high-demand services. This slide is showing that greatly being in the area of marketing and market promotion to a point that at this point in time we are making an analysis to see deeper in terms of the return on investment in the expenditure that we make in terms of support on marketing and market promotion. Greatly there, it's giving exposure of the SMME products and as well as creating linkages in terms of supply chain linkages with the private sector. For the incubation category, of course, we are seeing that the agriculture and agro-processing incubators are doing well. And I must mention that the lead there is our Timberley-supported incubator. We also have some manufacturing incubators as well that are doing very well. And I think the joy in us is that we are seeing these manufacturing enterprises coming from the high tech end in terms of their manufacturing capabilities. The next slide 24, client supported again in terms of the incubators, looking at the numbers and seeing where we are having the greatest numbers. As I had mentioned, the greatest numbers are in the manufacturing, combining with high-tech mixed technology incubators, as well as agriculture and agro-processing. Jobs created, the greatest area where we are seeing jobs is in construction and agriculture and agro-processing. I must indicate, though, that the economic climate is affecting our targets in relation to targets as set by the companies for their ability to create more jobs. We do not see ourselves growing in terms of job creation as would be done by the companies as we wish to, and it's all relating to the current economic sectors, especially in the previous year, in the previous calendar year, looking at quarter two and quarter three economic results. Towards the end of the performance information slides, I can just highlight once more that we do have certain risk areas and we are having some mitigation plans. One of the key risk areas that we are working hard to mitigate is the aspect of inadequate funding. We see that our funding is shrinking because the cost of delivery to the SMEs is increasing, but we are working hard in terms of finding partners that we can work with. In this light, we are singling out partnership with Nesita that assisted three of our incubators, as well as a partnership that we have established, as I mentioned earlier on, that is not reflected here, with services sector. We have concluded an agreement with them that will also enable us to provide more training for business advisors, not only CIDA business advisors, including business advisors from other development firms in the ecosystem. I have talked to the areas in terms of our improvement areas in relation to us being better able to respond to client needs, and one of the mitigation areas of focus, as I indicated, is research and development, but greatly it's us being able to offer some information and services to our clients online, which will take some load from our business advisors for them to be able to reach out to areas where most of the people would not even be able to get these online services. So in this quarter, we also finalized our online platform, SIDA, where some clients can do some primary Q&A as part of the diagnostic work and receive some information on an interactive platform online. Moving to slide 29, one of the other things that we've done is CIDA in this quarter was to finalize our plan of improving our social
intent and honorable promo. Can we have one minute?
Okay.
So
our social engagement, we are strengthening our presence as CIDA on the media platforms and providing dedicated resources to this. Staff component of CIDA, we are currently at the point of reporting staff of 673 people. Of these, 194 are business advisors. And of these business advisors, 25 of them are business advisors that we have been able to bring on board through MOUs with the municipalities. And I'm mentioning this because when we report again, maybe in the following year, one may not see these 25 business advisors because some of those agreements with the municipalities would have lapsed, and the municipalities, most of them, are not showing interest to renew these agreements. On their side, citing budgetary constraints, not anything about the service. I think from this point, I will hand over to the CFO. Starting from slide 31.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Honorable Portfolio Members. Slide 31. This shows the financial report and the budget for 2017-18 is 820 million. And we indicate the split of our expenditure to indicate that 330 million goes towards the compensation of employees, which is 40% of the budget, and operating cost, it's 145 million, which is about 18% of the budget, and the programs and projects, it's 331 million, which is 40% of the project, and capital expenditure is about 12.6 million, which is about 1.5% of the budget. And for the period to December 2017, the amount spent was 532, and we just indicated that the underspending is about 28.8 million against the budget of 561. And for this same period, we had commitments amounts that are contracted of about 23.9 million. Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Chair. On page 32, slide 32, we indicated the expenditure performance. This slide basically indicates the money that we have received and then as we have spent it over the period. And it indicates from the period of 2013-14, 14-15, 15-16, 16-17, and 17-18. What it highlights is the growth in the budget as well as the consistent spending of the money as they talk to the performance. It's a graph that indicates the performance for the period over those years as I've mentioned them. And the next slide, which is slide 33, this one basically indicates the amount spent per program. Amount spent for program one, which is enterprise development, the budget year to date, it's 312, and the amount spent is 306 million. And then the CEDA technology program, which covers the incubators, the technology transfers, budget 130 and actual 121 million, and administration, which is normally in our support services, the budget 117 and amount spent 104 million. And below it indicates the percentage. And the next slide is slide 34. This one indicates this is just a summary of the audit report, as well as the fact that CEDA we take seriously the audit findings, and we have looked at the audit findings and came up with remedial actions to address those audit findings. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
we will have an opportunity for members to ask questions and engage with the report. Honorable Tusa, followed by Honorable Mabasa, Honorable Chan, Honorable Ndawese, and Honorable Chaka. And that's it. Yes, Honorable Tusa, yes.
Madam Chair, can I ask both entities, or just do CIPA and then see that?
Both,
all right. Thank you. Madam Chair, I only got one question to CIPA, and I want to know from CIPA is what are they doing when they working with informal business? Because on the, I think it's page 6, they mentioned that they definitely help informal business financially. My question is, what are they doing to formalize this informal business? Because this is the ultimate. I mean, we want to take informal business and formalize them so that they can be more successful. So I'm just asking the question to CIPA, what are they doing about that? Because the problem is, we sit with a knowledge problem in South Africa. We don't know who's the informal business. And now informal business come and knock at CIPA's door or CIPA's door. And I was wondering if they give this information over to CIPA to help us train the informal business and formalize it. Then, Madam Chair, I've got a lot of questions to CIPA, so please bear with me. Page 4. Page 4 and 13 is about the same issue. I would just like to know, first of all, on how many cooperatives and SMMEs does CIPA think they must assist per year to reach the target of the NDP in 2030? And then if you just go to page 13 on the same question, if you look at slide 25, if we do business as usual, I don't think we will ever reach that target. Of course, there's about 12 years left, and if you just make normal calculations, we will see we will never create enough jobs in 2030 if we carry on doing business as usual. But that's a question. Page 7, Madam Chair, the rural areas. I just want to know, what is CIPA doing in the rural areas? I think rural areas in this conversion, how active they are in rural areas, and then page 15, the last question, Madam Chair. And it's about the offices in Mpumalanga. Again, I just want to know how many offices are in the rural areas in Mpumalanga, or do they have only as offices in the bigger cities, especially in Mpumalanga? Because Mpumalanga is a vast rural area, and rural people struggle to go to town. So I'm just wondering if they can just give us an indication of offices in the rural areas, especially in Mpumalanga. I'm interested. Longer, but if they want to answer nationally, it will be a good thing. Thank you, Madam Chair. That's my questions.
Honorable Mabasa.
Thank you very much, Comrade Chairperson. Thanks for both teams for the presentations they have made. My first question, based on I think on both SIDA and SIFA, noting that businesses in informal areas, in rural areas, vehemently need assistance. How is the partnership of SIFA and SIDA making sure that they are not discriminated against unconsciously? Because they must be very difficult to reach. So how do you make sure that they are not receiving less attention than businesses, informal areas, and also that will relate to, we may find that formally established businesses benefit more from SIFA and SIDA compared to those that are struggling off the ground. Is it not easily opportunistic to ignore the most difficult to help? You know, that's one question. And then the other question to SIDA on slide on slide 20. But not only to SIDA, but to both SIDA and SIFA. If this department does not carefully and capably look after people with disabilities, which other department will be able to take care of those people? Because this is a department that is formed for the poorest of the poor, in all respects. So if you are only struggling to make the minimum, you know, I think that's a challenge. Are we saying that in South Africa we are not having people with disabilities? Is it that you are not doing enough to relate to organizations of people with disabilities? I remember I once connected the DG to an organization of people with disabilities. Is it not that we don't care for those relations? Because if we care and we don't lose those relations, it will be easy for us to move along with them. And my last question is on slide 7 on SIFA. 45% of approvals to date benefited the productive sectors of the economy. 45% So, but what do we mean there? If you can give it a little bit of flesh so that one can understand it broadly. Yeah, no, for now, Comrade Chair, that is it. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Only the fact that you fastened the driver on the match. So, we'll take the next one. Take it in terms of the coverage.
Thank you, Acting Chair. But take note, you would recall that there was a decision was taken earlier that we need to make sure that we don't lose members. Those were debating. So as and when we ask, we must be conscious of that fact. Proceed.
Okay, thank you. And thanks to the presenters for your presentations this morning. Starting off with CEPA, a very simple question for the chair and the CEO and the CFO, and that is, are you prepared to blow a hole in your balance sheet by writing off that 86% of loans that are non-performing beyond 180 days? Because surely it's time you bit the bullet here and just accepted that those loans are not recoverable. I mean, I think when the Auditor General does this investigation into the department and the agencies, we have to ask them to look at this issue of the unrecoverable loans, because you're just kidding yourselves if you think that these loans are going to be recovered. Most of those businesses have probably gone under, or something is preventing them from paying the money back. Obviously, your future loan policy is changing, we hope, because obviously we see that the collections on more recent loans are much better. But just accept the fact that things were terrible in the past and write it off, because otherwise you're actually kidding yourselves and your shareholder, the IDC, and all of us. If you don't write the whole lot off, then you need to be realistic about how much you should write off and how much you should just carry on chasing. And what is the cost of chasing all that money? I mean, it must be costing you a fortune. So what are the returns on your expenses in chasing that money? There's a concern over the very low lending to township businesses. And what do you put that down to? Is it because the deals aren't there to be done, or is the quality of the deal not high enough to persuade you to lend them the money? The running sore of the session of debtors, what is the progress that you're making with Treasury on agreement within the PMFA to session seed debtors? The other thing that's concerning is there seems to be very little correlation between the disbursements and the approvals at the moment. You've managed to disburse almost your targeted amount, but your approvals are very, very low, and you've explained that by revolving loans. Now, is there not a concern that you're pushing your clients to borrow money when they shouldn't be wanting to borrow money, just to hit your disbursements target? And once the current low approvals is rolled over into the succeeding quarters, you're going to see your disbursements drop dramatically. And if they don't drop dramatically, then we'll have to ask the question, why is that? Are you pushing loans on clients just to meet your targets, or are those clients actually in need of those loans? Question to CEDA. You talk about the balanced scorecard, Chair, and operational excellence being a major one. I just want to give some feedback on a visit that I made to a CEDA branch recently. I'm not going to say which branch it was, because much of the information that was supplied to me was confidential, or at least it was potentially going to point fingers at certain individuals that would place them at risk. But I want to place on record some of the information that I received from that visit, which I think, again, you need to take seriously. First of all, the huge amount of time that it takes to complete an application, approximately 8 hours, this business advisor told me, it took sitting at a computer, capturing data into the CRM system, and then writing a report. Apparently, the IT systems that are running at CEDA are extremely old, they date to the DTI days, and they're cumbersome. You also have no linking between the systems. You have a CRM system, which is a custom-made system. You have a spreadsheet system for developing your budgets, and you have a Word-based system for your reports. And you can't share information for one and the other. So there's an enormous amount of time spent capturing information and repeating stuff that should be imported automatically from one system to another. So I want to ask the question, what are you doing to upgrade your systems? Questions were also raised about the value add from the manager of the branch. It seems that rather than actually doing a lot of value adding work, a lot of it is just approving applications and without actually going into the management of the staff. There were allegations of procurement and payment system abuse. In other words, service providers that had not got a reference number were being paid, and that is a suggestion of potential corruption and collusion between service providers and certain members of the staff. The staff morale was extremely low, and it goes to the point that you made a 2.9 out of 5 in terms of your employee satisfaction index. There are a lot of allegations of bullying of staff from middle and senior management, and this is leading to a loss of confidence and a loss of morale, which surely should worry you as an employer. There's an overemphasis on box ticking and chasing the numbers rather than actually measuring client satisfaction and providing services to your clients. Then when assessments are done, they're not done on comparable periods, they're done on 6-month periods. So for example, if you do an intervention in January, the assessment is then done in July, which is measuring the January to July period. And then you do another assessment, which is for assessing the July to December period, which is not comparable to the first period. The question was, why don't you do assessments on comparable periods, year on year? Because, of course, the year performance changes to various reasons, climatic reasons, market reasons, all sorts of things. Then just the final point was another box-ticking thing, the measurement of clients sent to international exhibitions. Many of them are not ready to be sent on the exhibitions, and yet they're sent just so that they can meet a target. So the question then comes down to this, is what are the measurements to evaluate your core business, which is business development services? And I'm asking the CEO now, because I know that you are developing a relationship with the Business Development Services organization, and it's a very crucial question. How do you actually evaluate your performance? Because you're still measuring it mainly on the basis of activity rather than outcomes. I don't see, apart from job creation, which again is a very, how do you actually measure that? You're not measuring actual value add. You're measuring your own activity within the organization. Activity-based costing, fine, but what about activity-based outcomes? Outcomes-based measurement. We've been saying it over and over again, longitudinal analysis is critical. Then, this point about domain registrars, I'm not quite sure what that means on the slide 17. I mean, in my understanding, a domain registrar is a what entity that registers a URL. So if you could just please explain that to us. When the Minister of Trade and Industry gave his budget speech yesterday, he mentioned that a number of the gazelles had now entered the Black Industrialist Program, which is a suggestion of growth and maturity of these businesses. If you could just give us some information on that, please. And then finally, you make reference in slide 27 to the growth garage model. What is the growth garage model? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Lau.
Thanks, Chair. Quickly, I will go to CIFA, slide 8, about the wholesaler lending loan books of advance. Yeah, I just want to know what was the challenges you met not to reach the target as you did. Quarter 3, if you can see, you only achieve 23% and the overall annual target is very low. Maybe you can tell us what was the challenges which make you not to achieve as such. And slide 11, Again, about the wholesale lending books disbursement, we're very worried about the lending to the cooperatives. If you can check quarter one, it was zero to cooperatives, quarter two, 2.4, and quarter three is 1.11. And in total, general is 2.5, compared to the what you budgeted for. So if the cooperatives, do you have any challenges in terms of financing or targeting these cooperatives? Because you can see cooperatives now, they are being catered slowly than the SMMEs. Slide 13, again, is a worry factors, because the first quarter and second quarter and the third quarter, the development impact was very also down, but when you completed the year, it skyrocketed. Do you relax maybe sometimes in the beginning of the year, relax, start to be serious at the end of the year? So, slide 14, can maybe sometimes supply the details on a separate page to the committee secretary about the targeted groups. Slide 14, the youth, which area, how many youth, which provinces, and so that we can check whether the rural and the disadvantaged community have been catered or not. Slide 16. So we see the 180 days people who didn't pay the entity amount to 86%. Just want to know in terms of rents, how much is owned by these 180 plus days, and what are the strategy to collect the debt of this highly 86%. Again, can also explain the difference between slide 16 and slide 18. In slide 18, it shows that you collected the money up to 99%, only 1% left. And in slide 16, you said you put from 60 to 90 days, 91 days, up to 180 plus people who are owing. So which group are these people in slide 16 for? That is the CIFA questions from me. So with CIDA, I have some clarification questions. Chief, I'm being intimidated here. And, you are a cherry.
You are protected.
Okay, thank you.
you sometimes think that you are, both of you are still in the youth league.
He said he was going to be quick, so now he's speaking forever.
Thanks. With regard to CIDA, at slide 40, you mentioned the CIDA client conversation. So we're not clear about the time, the period, which year or which month. I say it's the month under review which we're talking about. And slide 15, can you provide us with the details per province and per municipality about what is happening at slide 15?
That's the last one.
Yeah, the last one is about the client demographic at slide 20. So I'm worried, as the Honorable Member Mawasa said, about the client which are owned by people with disability. We see Limpopo is zero and KZN is zero there. So this is a question to us, and in Free State it's 1%. I'm concerned about Limpopo, in particular in Gauteng, because those are my former provinces, that it can't be zero, that there is no people with disabilities. We are very worried about that, because there are so many organizations and institutions which dealing with the disability, which the CEDA can make sure that they must approach them if they don't have the knowledge of them, if they are not being approached by such people. Lastly, Chairperson, slide number 26, about the lack of integration between the strategic planning and budgeting. You said there is a 4% reduction in funding for 3 years, and it also incorporates programs to be migrated from the DSBB. Which programs are this one to be migrated from the Department of Small Business and Development? Thank you, Chairperson.
No, Chair, thanks. Only one question from CIFA, page 8, perhaps on slide 16. Perhaps somehow it would have been asked, but mine was to ask on the post-investment monitoring total portfolio at risk. My interest was to understand, do we have any that we, people we have lended money or given, that we have erased their credit or something? If yes, how much money was involved?
Thanks. Can we get to the responses? Looks like CIFA wants to start.
Yes.
Sure. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. I think the first question from Honorable Kruger relates to the program that we have to graduate the informal business into formal. I must say we don't we really don't have a program at this stage for us to take them to the next level. I know most of them are subsistence purposes, but we do not have a program at this stage. Onto that, I think it's something that we may look at going forward in collaboration with CEDA. I think this question also was posed to CEDA, and then. There was also, I think it also responds to the question by Honorable Mavas in terms of the informal and the rural, whether there is partnership between CIFA and CEDA in making sure that we do not really discriminate onto that. But I must say, if you look in terms of our, from a funding and support point of view, one would say almost 90% of our activities are in the informal sector. And if you compare between the wholesale lending and the direct lending, and on wholesale, if we zoom on the support, we really work with partners applying the Grameen bank model of Bangladesh to support the informal sector. So. I would say we are biased more on the informal sector than the formal sector, in terms of if we look at the CIFA business as a whole. There was also a question related, I think just to explain the question on the, there's also a question about Mavas relating to, I think before that, all this is it also applied to CIFA, the one on the people with disability. Which department should deal with this? I believe that the Department of Small Business Development and its agencies, we need to support entrepreneurs with disability. We need to come up with a number of ways to identify them and support. Our institution has recently participated, I think it was last month when I was here for the APPs and corporate plan, at the SABC Day for potential entrepreneurs with disability. And then my team gave me a list of about 78 entrepreneurs that approached our stand during the SABC two-day progress, where we want to follow up with them to see how can we then I support them. These are entrepreneurs already that are in business. There's a potential for us going forward. But as we indicated earlier, we have not really done much thus far. We launched a fund, as you remember, the scheme of 30 million for entrepreneurs with disability. Out of the 30 million, only about 7 million is left in terms of the approval on this particular scheme. But once it's depleted, we'll replenish it. The next question relates to...
Did you read the report of the Portfolio Committee on Oversight to Gauteng?
No,
2014-2015?
No, sir.
And also in your strategic plan, in your strategic planning session together with the Department of Small Business, CISA and CIFA, there was no reflection on that report. I'm mentioning that report because there is a specific recommendation about SHARP. SHARP is a fully fledged manufacturing business. Mm-hmm. All the people that are working there are physically challenged people. It's a center. Jeffrey Ndumo lives 5 houses down Sharp. There is a specific recommendation from the Portfolio Committee about what needs to be done in Sharp. Because the product that they are producing is a product that is consumed by municipalities. It's protective wear. But they don't, they are not part of the market. They are actually exploited by a person who found a way of accessing the market and who manipulated the BEE status. Because the center is there, it was built through fundraising led by Friday Mavuso. The machines are their machines, industrial machines. They pay for the electricity. This person provides them with the material. When the person sew this for me, give them the material, the cotton, sew this for me, I will pay you for your hands. Serious, serious exploitation. Manipulation of BEE scorecard. And we made a very, very specific recommendation in that report. So, the question relates to, are we adding value by undertaking oversight and making recommendations to actually guide the department and its entities on how to respond? Or it's just a report, one of those reports. We will continue and do things as we have been doing in the past. But very, very painful. All those people reside at the backyard of that facility, in shacks, and they are using
not even VIP toilets, pit latrines. We were wondering just where this bad smell was coming from. And then at the end of the meeting, they led us to where they live. And if that recommendation was read, there would have been a facilitation of building houses there for them. And there would have been a situation to actually help them have their own material and access the market on their own, not to be exploited the way they are. We are being very practical here. We don't theorize. And when you come to report to us knowing that we go out and see things. We don't only relate to reports that are presented to us. So what would be the reason for not looking at that and responding to it? And then have a report in front of us today that has got zero for Gauteng, when Sharp is in Gauteng.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to mention that we take your recommendation very seriously. I think in terms of the improvement in all we are doing over the past number of years thus far, it was based on the recommendation and the advice we received. I think on this particular one, I admit, Chair, that I think there are shortcomings from our side that we should have been taken that into consideration. I've noted that. I know the team did receive that, but we should have taken. I didn't read the report. I didn't read the report, but the information that you have highlighted, I have that in my hand.
Can I give an advice here? In the same way that we read your report to understand your work, we expect you to do the same. Read our report and understand what is contained.
Okay, thank you, Chair. The next question was on slide 7 relating to the ask for us to explain the 45% productive sector. When we develop our corporate plan, we said we are looking at the sector that have got high potential to create jobs in terms of the IPEP. So the productive sector of the economy, which is the area, for example, look at manufacturing, look at the area of tourism, you look at the green economy, etc. So we are saying as much as we are doing our support to small businesses, let us not only focus on services sector, let's say largely the services sector, but that part that has got potential to create jobs. So it's a measure that we are saying, let us, it used to be 40% for the organization for the past couple of years. For this year, 2017-18, we increased to 60%, and it will stay 60% for the foreseeable future. So that we should also identify those sectors that have high potential to create jobs. And the what we did on the direct lending for the quarter under review. There was a question relating to the write-off from Honorable Chance with regard to our write-off of the loans. We have got a very strict, if I have to put that way, strict write-off policy. Before we write off any transaction, we must prove that we have followed all the processes, which we do every year. When the client is in default, you send letters of demand, you send summon, you then judgments, and after that you follow the sureties, etc. Once you have exhausted all those, you then have to write off from time to time. Last year, which is 2016-2017, we wrote off about 78 million of the portfolio of long outstanding transaction. This year, we have taken to the internal processes, to the audit and risk, about 74 million, which translates to about maybe about 10% or so of the book that is of the portfolio at risk. As much as we agree that we need to look at that, but we need to make sure that let's follow as much as process and policy as possible, so that even if the auditors come in, they need to say that at least the process were followed. However, I must also indicate that before you even write off all those clients that reflect that they are not able to be recovered, they are already impaired. So from an accounting point of view, you have already impaired. You have already recognized that particular loss. If you remember the 2015-16 financial year, which our impairment charge was about 389 million. And then currently you've just shown what I put here, about 14 or so million movement for the year to date. So the impairment, the loss as it were, from the impairment point of view has already been recognized in our books for that 180 days. But we're saying, let us collect. Even if you say you're going to write off, we have got a clause in our policy that you should try your means to recover. And then we try to minimize the cost of collection. We use, for example, the debt collectors to follow up, etc. But where we realize that, you know, the business has gone down due to economic condition, etc., we'll just write off and that's it. But where we realize that maybe the owners of the business might have taken us for a ride, we'll follow it all the way. But we prudently write off, but we are maybe we conservatively write off. Yes, the book is significant, but we are saying the one that is sitting 180 days, let's still follow it up and then but minimize the cost associated with that. The concern relating to the township businesses. I think this is one debate that we're still engaging. We support taxis, for example, which ordinarily we believe that the taxis are residing in the, they are doing business in the township in terms of our reporting. But our mechanism says we need to look at domicilium in terms of where the business owner is staying. So we have done an exercise where we pick up that most of the business owners might be staying in town. However, the taxis are operating in the township. So it's one of the measurements that we need to look at, that perhaps we may have understated the township operating because we took the addresses that are residing outside the township. We're trying to engage with our partners in terms of maybe looking at the permits, etc. But it's one of the areas where this target previously we used to combine it with rural and township, which we need to look at improving it as we move forward. The issue of sessions. I mean, I personally met with the colleagues from the National Treasury on this matter, and then they are saying, which is correct, that yes, a session is between CIFA and its client. You agree on the session. The critical matter where we wanted the National Treasury to get involved is when you want to execute, to enforce that particular session. So it's a discussion that is ongoing with them, because they are saying we must try and engage with a variety of clients that we engage with so that they can agree and then the other partners. Invariably, you find that us and the client, we agree on the session. But the other party where the client has got a business is not agreeable in terms of their policies, both private and public sector. It's not always agreeable, which is one of the battles that we face. And that has an impact in terms of our approval activities. Because at approval, we need to make sure that is agreeable in the first instance. So it's a battle that we continue to pursue going forward. There is a question that is there is a correlation between disbursements and approvals. I just want to state that when we look at approvals, is the approval that will take place in terms of whether you approve direct lending clients or you approve the wholesale clients. But insofar as the disbursement is concerned, based on the engagement that we had then, maybe at the second year of CIFA's existence with the executive authority at the time, is that CIFA must measure the impact of government money into the economy. So we will have given money to a partner, a strategic partner, an intermediary, whether it's a retail financial intermediary or microfinance intermediary, who rely on funding from CIFA. So the disbursement that they make in the community, let's say they get 100 million, they roll out that 100 million maybe three times into 300 million, and they're getting funding from the state. The impact of the money from the state, how much does it relate to that? So to avoid double counting, if we then give that intermediary 100 million, we don't count that 100 million as a disbursement for the purpose of developmental assessment. We only count what is it that an intermediary or a business partner did with the money that they received into the economy or to the end user. Hence, you find that there would not be a correlation between disbursements and approval in terms of our reporting mechanism. I think that responds to the question of disbursement. The other question relates to, I think, Honorable Mlaudzi, there was a question, challenges that we didn't reach on the wholesale target, and in particular, I think, referring to the cooperatives. You will recall that we had a significant lessons learned around the funding of the cooperatives in Mpumalanga that the portfolio committee has visited. Out of that lessons learned, which is the model where we are doing this on our own, and I indicated silo previously, we felt that we need to really put a brake on the pedal a little bit and just do a reflect that the manner in which we are approaching funding to co-ops when we're doing alone, is it working? Hence, we decided that let's enter into technical support engagement with other stakeholders, particularly FIDA and the Department of Small Business Development, as well as the local LEDs. So we put a bit of a break just to do an introspection on that in that regard, based on the lessons learned. Hence the activities within the quarter one and the quarter three in the wholesale has been very stagnant. We're putting together the policies, systems and procedures in place. However, we're concentrating on the need to collect the money that is due. For particularly relating to there was a question on the additional information on where some of these activities taking place, provinces and the municipalities, which will provide the separate information. We do have the breakdown of where those, I think it was like say 13, where the youth, where the black, where the women are, we'll be able to provide onto that. There was also a question that talks about the 180 days strategy. I think it's more in terms of where we identify we can't collect based on the policy. We'll write them off, but we need to pursue them as much as we can. And the value of it is just 86% of the total portfolio at risk. Which is, if you look at 16, it will be 86% of the 879 million, and of the portion that is sitting at 180 days. There was also a question related to also the grouping on, I think slide 19, relating the information that needed to be provided in terms of the breakdown of activities, which we're going to provide. Honorable Kakwa, the question on the post-investment monitoring, I think slide 16, I think you specifically wanted to know the correlation between, a slide 16 where we're talking about collection, but at the same time we are sitting with a high level of book that has got a high portfolio at risk. The collection is largely on the new, what's the so-called new book. In other words, the book that is outside the 180 days. In 180 days, that's where the large portion of collection comes from. Do we have people that we have erased of credit? Yes, as I said, some of them we have written off 78 million the previous year, 74 million coming up now. to be written off, basically meaning the erasing. But we, where possible, we can still pursue the surety of those transactions. I'm not sure if I left anything, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
I think I would like to touch on the operational excellence staff first, whether it comes from there. Honorable Chancellor, what you mentioned, we are very much aware of those nuances. And actually, they are the key why we started moving more into the balanced sector platform, so we can start up unpacking the bottlenecks within the system. It is most unfortunate that at the provincial branch level, provincial managers are aware of all the data we present here related for their province. So yes, sometimes they call it box ticking and chasing numbers, but it takes numbers to report the number of jobs eventually here in the certain tempos that they put to the follow. What we've done is we've approved a new IT strategy going to the future with the sole intent of actually integrating systems. In fact, at headquarters, we've moved quite a lot in integrating systems at headquarters and also integrating, also looking into the CRM system. We are aware of the issues that are there within the CRM system, and there are projects within the IT sphere that are looking into easing up the burden that provincial offices face. And now then, we always talk about the fact that there's not enough BAs at provincial level. We need to get more BAs. Now, the less BAs we have, the more pressure is on provincial managers to also do BA work. Hence, the need to try and find ways of getting more staff at that level to also do the field. If you take Mpumalanga, for example, we've got 5 branches in Mpumalanga and 24 co-location points. So we are reaching out the most in Mpumalanga in terms of co-location and getting into the rural areas. All that information has to sit all back to the provincial offices to collate all of that data. And what we're trying to do going forward is actually to integrate systems between the BAs and SMMEs. So whenever SMEs are going through the normal management of their job, we have a way of leaning into how well the business is going and getting data back to CIMIC instead of running up and down the road visiting them all the time just to find out how things are going. This is something that we're also currently looking into, as well as online access for most people. CEO talked about looking into the portals of making sure that people can actually reach either online, because some of the time that's wasted that people complain about is that there's 53,000 people that I must talk to, and of that quota I have to talk to 5,000. Surely most of those people could have just found out about CEDA, because they could have walked in and said, oh, what do you call CEDA, but they could have found it for themselves. So it's taking an hour to explain something that somebody can get online. So we're looking at also the online piece of the world. Some of these roll up into the satisfaction. And so every time we measure employee satisfaction, we pick up those nuances where there's still a lot of work to be done. If you probe further within the branch, we probably would have highlighted, seen especially move down the rank a little bit. We probably would have found out that people start talking about remuneration or career progression. So that all these nuances that are the envy of who people are as employed people that we have to look into all at the same time. So yes, we are looking into that's concerned. Chair, see yours.
Take another say something about walking. And I also I mentioned it before in this committee. Talk about walking. I did myself. I walked in Witbank's office, and I asked to get some forms to register a cooperative. And the lady told me, no, they don't do that. I must go to Land Reform Department. So I said, no, not according to my understanding. And I had a discussion with her. I even took my card out and show her where I'm from. And she said, all right, sorry, I will sort it out. So 2 months later, I went to the same office, speak to the same lady and ask her again, please, can I have some forms to register a cooperative? And guess what was the answer? No, CEDA don't do cooperatives. land reform, a rural development report, because I must go down the street to go and do that. So there's no way that you can just walk into CEDA and get some business advice. So it's not easy. It's not easy at all. So it's just
Thank you, Jay. I think not that we come from the same era with honorable member, but I think I agree with him. But thanks for the presentations, colleagues. I think I agree with him. It is very difficult. But I also I'm taking a keen interest about the question that was asked about the offices, particularly the rural area related issues. Because in the rural areas, majority of these people, they can't get help from these institutions. And now I wonder if colleagues have ever interacted with the resolutions of the ruling party around these issues on the question of the approach generally. And if yes, I think we may have to revisit the resolutions of the ruling party. I think they are quite clear on how we must prosecute this work. But the CEDAS or CIFA vis-a-vis the rural area benefit remains a very, very serious challenge. I'm from a rural area called Siabuso. So Siabuso is, as you go to, from Pretoria, you just go down towards, you pass Omhlanga and a number of issues. And there are a number of small business as you go there. There are a lot of people, they want to, you can see that this person is trying, but he does not have any help and does not know where to knock. The whole route, R753, going to Marble Hall. Just to drive to that road, you can see this is a small business. This is an informal business. They are trying whatever they are trying to do. But no one is able to assist. Or they either don't know, or they are not getting the help. So we may have to DG, maybe going, we have started a new financial year. We may have to reprioritize how we want to give assistance to the entities themselves. Because we need to touch that ground. We need to touch that ground. If we can touch that ground, I think we can do a lot, Chair, in terms of assisting majority of these people. And majority of them are just young people, young entrepreneurs and so on. So, but like I said last time, that I'm almost new in the committee. But we'll look very deep in terms of trying to engage the entities and say, here are these people, look at this one, look at this one, look at this one. What is your response? Practically and literally. Particularly in that area that I'm counting. So I'm looking forward to the CEO and literally come with this, here people, this is what they are trying to do, and how do we try to assist. And one other matter, Chair, the issue of the money that you said is 78 million, but that gets to be written off. That was in the previous financial year. I think I have an interest in the processes that we follow that culminate towards us having to write off these monies. I think if they can provide us with more information next time. They don't need to answer now, but I'm interested to get the process flow, the dashboard against which we follow
up until we get to write off an amount up to 78 million. I think it's quite an alarming figure. But we're doing a good job, I think I must say that too. Good job, but I think there's quite a lot that we need to improve on going forward. Thank you, Chair.
Have you responded to all the questions that were put to us?
Alex is a provincial manager to answer more from the grassroots level of other issues.
Thank you, Chair.
Sorry, DJ, you had your hand up. Did you want to say?
I wanted to come in at the end, but I wanted to come in at the end as my minister is also calling me to come and do some of the work that she's alluded to earlier, that we have to see the work emerging from cluster and budget. I thought I wanted to say, just make this comment about the question around what efforts are we making. I think we keep talking that we work as a portfolio. Ourselves, CEDA and CIFA together. And so there is a strategy called LEVIS, which the House is familiar with, the National Informal Business Upliftment Strategy, which has several pillars. I think Inge was going to talk to it. And one of those pillars is a commitment to the IRO resolution on decent work and shifting the shift from informal to formal businesses. But we started implementing NEBIS just with phase one and two, with training and with providing infrastructure. And it's something that we have to progressively move towards as we understand that institution much better. And we really only started, I think we piloted NEBIS for the first time in 2015-16. And then the other instrument is CIF. But it's a question that stays with us around creating decent work and through more formal work. Other issues around the questions of people with disability. I wanted to say to the question of Honourable Mbatha that my understanding is that is a government-wide target. Every department is required to not only ensure that at least 2% of the senior managers are people with disabilities, but that 2% of their investments and their programs value. And that's where a lot of the technical support comes from. If you allow, Chair, and I have reported in the House, as a portfolio, we have reflected upon this. And therefore, as far back as March 2017, we, together with CEDA and CIFA, hosted a workshop where we called all of the organized bodies of disabled students, People with Disabilities South Africa, and the people with autism, dealing with blind, etc., and had a really incisive two-day workshop. And that has rolled into provincial translations. I think CEDA will say some of those entrepreneurs have now been listed on the CEDA database as clients, etc. So that we're taking them, those who need that support, through a process of being more ready to engage in business. So we're not blind to the problem, but I think the impact of the efforts that we are making will be seen later. With regard to the issue of sessions, I've also reported that we have an agreement with National Treasury, and in addition to what the CEO had said, what ultimately I think we wanted is for Treasury to issue a practice note in that regard. Of course, Treasury is very careful and saying that, and what are the implications of that? And there's something which is also, as we are working on these two new funds that we are introducing, we're asking, what are we learning from this? So there seems to be a growing culture. If people know that this is government money, they think they don't have to pay it back. So there's what, in terms of what the CEO says, how we are contracting, and I know the committee has a view that we shouldn't work through intermediaries, and there's a very different impairment rate. The wholesale funding, when we work with intermediaries, where it is indirect, and it is a real dilemma. So I think there's the work is bigger than ourselves in terms of that mindset change. And at some stage, Takani can share that research that has been done that supports this. Where you'll have an entrepreneur and they look at how that person, some of that 78% million that we've got that we have to write off, those people will start paying for their vehicles and for their business and for their bonds, but they won't service this debt because they think they can get away with it. And in terms of morale issues, I think I agree with what members have been saying, and we have said among ourselves as the leadership in the various agencies, sometimes we should walk into our service point as an ordinary person and not as ourselves, because the feedback isn't always flattering about how poor people, ordinary people are treated, and we constantly get complaints about it. I think, but there's also another side where there's, I think all three of us are driving an organizational change process, and many of the staff are resistant to that change. You have staff in offices that are generalists, and we've made the point before. Many of them are generalists and do not have any kind of business entrepreneurial mindset. And I was quite impressed when a young lady who sits in my reception, when I had a meeting with a team in my office the other day, said, you know, I need one to go on the training course, because when I sit there in reception, people ask me, how do I start a business? And I don't even know how to do it. So that developing of a business acumen and understanding the nature of the work that we're doing should not just be dependent on ourselves. But we are, I think, maybe my last comment, Chair, is, and there's a lot of talk about the fourth industrial revolution. And so what that suggests is that it will change the whole world. It will change the way in which we transact, in the way we deal with each other. And so I think a lot of our applications that we're moving towards is, how do you do a lot of that online? And therefore the turnaround times are a lot easier. And we know that it's...
Thank you. I see that you generally say we, at one, the program stops. I think, I don't want the department to be academic. I don't want us to be academic, even in terms of the questions. We can ask questions. You don't need to really find yourself hard to respond, because you can write to the committee and say, this is the question. But the question must be, you want to move from academia to practical. It must be practical. This is a practical department. This
It's not like we must sit with computers, desktop department. We must be just going there like we are building RDP houses. The same as this department, almost. But if we are going to be academic in terms of the presentations, the way we respond to questions, we are going to just deal with time. When it's 1 o'clock, then we must go. Then we have satisfied having met the portfolio committee. I don't think it's about compliance generally. It should be about us having to do something. So we'll take the questions, we'll take this, but we want to say something tangible. We want to go to practicals and say, this is what has happened. This is the number of people who have improved, made them to be entrepreneurs. We have developed their skills. This is this. But if we are going to be so academic, even when we have an interaction with the portfolio committee, it will be like, no, we're defending this one. We have answered this one. I don't think it's a correct approach. That's why I'm saying we need to change the way we're dealing with a design. Everything, the design must change. Even when we come here, it shouldn't be about we're going to, the portfolio is going to attack us, then we must respond. No, it should be like we're going to have a fruitful interaction. We're going to tell them that in Siyabuswa, this is what we've done in the Kwaggafontein in Pretoria, rural, these are the people, and assist us, enhance our work. It shouldn't be like it's portfolio committee and the department. We are just one thing that we are committed towards changing the lives of the people for the better out there, in the rural areas, in the urban areas. But I'm just seeing an interaction like it's us and them. And I think we've got to change that design, Chair, as we go forward. It must just drastically change. It's not about questions and answers, then we're done. Want the work.
Without using many words, Comrade Bongo has hit the head with the nail. Is it? Yeah. But there is no better eloquence of expressing this, really. Let me just stop there, Comrade Chair.
So, before you continue, there are three things that I want us to address. We have got a letter from the department from one official who is calling himself or herself a whistleblower. In that letter, there is an issue about the staff in the department feeling aggrieved that they are portrayed as people who can't do their work, who don't have the capacity. And they are making reference to the statement that I issued. Statement that was saying, for the first time, the DG admitted that there is lack of capacity in the department. And people who were migrated from DTI do not match or are not equal to the challenge. That ends up with that, but that's not a complete statement of what I said. I said that because the DG had said that in the portfolio committee. But I also added in that to say, I came to Parliament having not chaired
portfolio committee in my life. Parliament invested in me and trained me and gave me the skills that were going to enable me to chair the portfolio committee. And the reference was to the DG to say, DG, stop coming here to tell us that there is no capacity in the department. Those people were employed in DTI when this department was not in existence. And if there is then an issue of skills and capacity, develop a training program that is going to capacitate them and develop a career pathing program. The DG is repeating the same thing today. Specific questions are being asked about certain programs, about how the department, the CEDA and CIFA are responding to the felt needs on the ground. And the DG is saying to us, we have officials that do not have entrepreneurial skills. For how long are we going to have that as a complaint? Because leadership in an institution is about identifying shortage of skills that are required and then develop a program of how you are then going to ensure that those skills are acquired. I'm saying this because it's still going to come out and create animosity between the portfolio committee, as if the portfolio committee is looking down upon the staff in the department. We're not looking down upon the staff in the department. Those people were not employed and interviewed for this department. They were employed for DTI, a program. The department was established, given a broader mandate, and therefore, if the mandate is broader and it requires different skills, develop a program and empower them. Don't come to us and keep on telling us that the management in the we meet with the CFOs and CEOs in CEDA and CIFA. We agree, we understand, but the people below us don't have an understanding. It can't be like that, DG. It creates an impression that we are not satisfied with what we have and we can't find a way of improving that situation. And it's not the right thing. Secondly, Honorable Bongo is saying, talk to my area. Let me understand what is happening in my area. And even the previous questions were about that. Honorable Lawoso was saying, I am from Limpopo and Gauteng. And I added to him to say, and he says in the report there is nothing, zero, about projects assisted, projects owned by people with disabilities in Limpopo and Gauteng. And he's speaking because he represents that constituency. And then I stopped Mr. Makuba and said, hold on in your response. I want to be specific. We have been on the field. We went to Gauteng and we found SHAP. And I explained all about SHAP, but the response is about a conference, which is what Honorable Bongo is questioning. Are we going to be academic about issues that we need to be practical on? The question is very straightforward. What would make the department, CIFA and CIDA, not respond to the issue of SHAP? Because SHAP is a living example. We don't want to hear about the conferences and all those things. We want to see practical and tangible results. If we are talking about Chaguma, don't talk to us about the conferences and what have you and MOUs. tell us what has been done to address what the portfolio committee saw as a practical example to say, if you can do this in Chakuma, it can be replicated in the country. That is what we are talking about when we are saying, let's be practical. Let us leave theory.
My comment was going to be about the training that we are doing in that regard, but I will
theory and practical are two different things. Chakuma is not training that is needed. Chakuma needs a storage facility, Chakuma needs the light, Chakuma needs the toilet. Chakuma needs a space where they can put their children when they are selling. Those are practical things. It's not training. It's not training. The same situation applies to SHAP. It's not training. It's changing that environment. I have mentioned what is needed in SHAP. In SHAP, it's toilets. In SHAP is the shelter for the people that are working there. In SHAP is changing the manner in which those people are working to be made laborers by another person, exploiting the fact that she is not going to pay for any rent because the facility belongs to them. She doesn't pay for electricity, so she doesn't have any overhead. And she is supplying protective wear that is used by government. Why can't we use the 30% procurement to say we will use our market access unit of the department to open a direct link between SHAP? We will convert SHAP into a cooperative if we think it's supposed to be like that. Why can't we be practical? What makes it difficult for us to be practical? What prevents us from doing that? Can you continue with your response?
Okay. Thank you, Chair. I might say, as agencies, we have taken note of your comments. And then we'll try, because some of these things we've got them, when we package our reports to you, we should really be saying, in these rural towns or in this township, this is what is happening. Not only this, in addition to this, we can say the people living with disability, there's Ikshan, there's Nomkabuzo, owning that in that place, I think that we could do. So we'll try in the next quarter to bring such information so that you don't feel as if you are talking the same thing to us all the time. My apologies for that. And then with people with disabilities, I think as an organization, we've seen that we were much more on events awareness, because thinking that from those awareness events, you will then get them. But we had a strategic session as the organization, now beginning of this financial year, and the executive manager has spoken to all of us as provincial managers that we really need to make it a point that there are interventions that are happening for people with disabilities. As I'm talking to you, APSA has already given me a guy in Kuguletu who's having a bakery, who's having a disability. So I'm making a point that I go to that, because it was referred to APSA by me. So we'll see to it that bakery, how do we assist that client? And then we can report to you, then this is what is happening in Witbank, in Kukuletu, in Ugu, and so on. So we've taken note of that. And then with regard to IGAVELs that have been graduated or to black industrialists, the information that we have is that we've got two that have been recommended, and these two is from the Eastern Cape and the Northwest, we're still waiting for the response from the Department of Trade and Industry on the guardrails. And then on the informal sector, DG has touched on NIBAS, but as CEDA, we were piloting what we call basic entrepreneurial skills development program, where what we do is that in an 8-month period, we identify informal businesses within our areas, but we had pilot sites for this. And then what we did, we got people, some of these guys are unemployed graduates. Then we take them as mentors to these informal businesses. And we've got great success out of that program. And now as an organization, we're looking at how can we roll that out. We call it BEST. Some people know it by BEST. So it's Basic Entrepreneurial Skills Development Program. What is nice about that program, that informal trader does not leave his or her stand. The person stays at the stand, and then this mentor comes to the stand and do everything in there in terms of how to assist that person in whatever that person needs in terms of his business. So we are really working with the informal sector, and also we are talking to the wholesale and retail sector, because also they have an interest in the informal sector. Bear in mind, some of these guys are retailers, so it talks to them. So we are working on that with the wholesale and retail sector. But also as CEDA, we are looking at getting our own resources, you know, in these trying times, to make it a point that program is a success. I think I've covered.
So you have to go. Yeah, Chair, you know, you are so good to me. We can win elections. That's what we want. So your success story, where did you write it in?
Thank you, Chair. That's why I then said what we need to do, because the interest of the portfolio committee is to see all the questions. Then when we do the report, we can package that to say, in this township, in this rural area, this is what we're doing. Taking into consideration what the portfolio committee member said, you know, because we seem as if we talk at an academic level. Then we can go down and we can package that. That is a promise that I'm making that we will do as the organization.
Allow me also to report back. You will remember last year we visited a woman cooperative in Dr. J's Morocco, chicken farming, if you remember correctly. We gave all that information through to CEDA and CIFA, if I can remember correctly. Well, I saw the woman a week ago. She haven't seen anybody from the department. So we can talk and we can talk and we can talk, but this is, this, you know, we can talk and we can talk and we tell what we do, but practical on the ground, from this committee directly to the entities and say, go and help that person, it's not happening. So I can't believe that anything else is happening, what we hear today. Thank you.
Let me try and maybe just to answer on the recruiter or one of the chances questions on the cost base, outcomes based cost base. We started the process, Jefferson, on dealing with the net and how do you cost your outcomes more specifically, and we started the process in the current financial year to the incubation program, where we now are measuring outcome based costing, and we're also doing we're focusing on all the costs that we put in by our incubation and looking at the return on our investment. So if we get so much from the fiscus, how much is the return that we get? And we've also weighted all the indicators across the measurables to make sure that all the incubators perform based on outcomes and not just things in the air. On the issue of the DOZETNA or the domain registration, it's an outcome from a program from the two portfolio committees of the Department of Telecommunication, Postal Services and the Department of Small Business Development. That agreement was then translated to the CEDA, the implementing arm, and we've now started a program with the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services to develop domain registrars in underserviced provinces. So it's in provinces like Mpumalanga, KZN, and where there's no domain registrars, or the domain registrars is dominated by a specific neighborhood. So with the department trying to transfer, to turn that thing around, and we've developed a specific program that will be run through an incubator to develop new domain registrars for the country that are black-owned and black-managed. The second thing we're going to do is to also develop what we call internet service providers. The same problem that we have in the country is dominated by a specific race group, and I think with the department we're trying to turn that process also around in developing new internet service providers. The third program that we're doing with the Department of Telecommunication and Postal Services to develop cell phone repairs in underserviced provinces and specifically townships and rural areas. So it's a program that will be that we've now developed for the Department of Telecommunication and Postal Services, and that program we will roll out in all three provinces. The last thing is on the growth garage model. So again, we've realized that we don't have the resources to be able to do all our work, and for us to be able to do more is to go into the private sector and crowd in private sector investment. So what we've done at CEDA, we've developed Jefferson, a simple model to crowd in money from the private sector to do more to our people. So we've modeled it around where ESD spending is going to private sector consultants. And what we want to do at CEDA is to bring some of that money from consultants into CEDA so that we can do more work following...
But you say that now, you said this is some consultants. CEDA is also using consultants.
I think I'm interested and I can come in at that point. CEDA is using consultants because we are working that in relation to the ratio of people that we can employ full time in terms of our cost structure.
No, I'm not querying that.
Okay.
I'm querying the fact that the gentleman is saying we are taking that money that is used to pay the consultants, and we are saying that money should come to CEDA, and CEDA will do the work. Then the question that I'm asking, the point that I'm making is that it's not CEDA that will do the work. CEDA will also outsource to its own consultants. Because that is what you actually do. We go to your offices, we get people that you work with, they are also consultants. So what is the difference?
I'm not sure I should continue. I see that the chance is flagging his hand.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Sia. I just wanted to pick up on the point, because in order to do that, you're going to need BE accreditation as a service provider, as is CIFA, for their purposes. So I'd like to just get an answer on how you're progressing on that front, also from CIFA.
All right. Actually, I was going to start there to say we are preparing for that, ma'am. Because firstly, for us to be able to do that, we would need to get a BE accreditation. That's why in my presentation, that's what I spoke to say we are working on that. We have been in our first leg of rating, and of course we still have some improvements to make. The final results are not yet there, but we have been receiving some feedback. Secondly, our focus is that if we can migrate some of this money, we will be able to do some shifts in our budget as well. Shifts that will enable us to take some money that currently we use on EDF in terms of Enterprise Development Fund and CEDA, shifting it with proper approval towards creating internal capacity that will enable us at least to have more of in-house capacity. I'm not saying immediately we'll be able to eliminate usage of consultants, but I am saying we are putting building blocks of bringing in additional capacity within tight constraints in terms of fiscal constraints. But in addition, ma'am, I could say we are as well, if we are going to the best program that Alex was talking about, we are also doing other means in terms of saying how do we make sure we create this capacity, even if we are talking consultants, but that should be seen as an additional arm of FCEDA. For example, with BEST program, we take young people, and we, alongside with that, we have a cadet program where we take young people and we put them on training, and in doing so, we are preparing some full soldiers that will be able to go to these areas where we want additional capacity to go towards. But in addition to that, we've seen that, especially for the informal sector, the best approach is the group intervention approach to a certain extent. And that is one of the things that we are modeling using the BEST program to say, how do we realize scale by providing group intervention? Again, that is what we are focusing on in terms of our work with the local economic development officers. We are working alongside with the SALGA in our negotiations for an agreement. We are working with the municipalities. Our provincial network management team, as it is now, they have a very clear mandate of participating in ICT sessions, in participation in LED forums, because from there we believe that's where we are going to get information in terms of projects that we can work on that are also having support from their localities, so that we don't come in and support things or projects that will not be aligned with the integrated plan of a specific area.
That is where you should have started, because that would have indicated to us that you understand the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act, you understand the integrated development planning process, and you also understand that it will be a futile exercise to support projects that are coming from individuals which are not in line with the local economic development strategy of a municipality. Because it is through that you can get the support from other departments. If you had started there, we would have understood you also. You would not be all over in terms of programs that you are going to be doing. You would be focusing, informed by the local assets and the local economic development strategy, so that an application that comes from a cooperative or an SNME in Umuzwabantu, where it's more about the national social development perspective of that area in agriculture. But you get an application there that talks about mining, you quickly know that that business will not succeed. Mm-hmm. So we want practical, not theory, practical. How it relates, how you understand this coordination, how you understand the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act, how you use that to arrive at the signing of the transversal agreement, and how your support relates to development of the local economy of each and every municipality. Time is up, and I think we need to come to the end of the meeting, because we have among extended public mini plenaries. Is there a point that you wanted to make?
I think you said, where I am now, I am at the heart of what you are actually saying. because if I can just close it, is to close it by saying we have even realized that our reporting mechanism is hiding this work to a point that when we are reporting from quarter one in 2018-19, we have an area where we are saying, let's report on these partnerships, and we are targeting those partnerships with the department to say what kind of project are we doing with this partner. And adding to that, we are now bringing in a new terminology in our report, which we've taken from this committee, that's talking about community visibility projects. So that when we are preparing a report here, for example, our report was coming along with a booklet of case studies. These case studies can talk to a Manisa's project as Manisa's company, but can also talk to some impact projects where a cluster of interventions. Thank you.
Thank you. In closing this meeting, let me make these few remarks. One, we want to see a roadmap, a picture that will tell us that the 9.9 new jobs will be created by 2030. In all the presentations that have been made, there is nothing that tells us that we will reach that target. We therefore need programs, presentations of programs and funding that speaks to that target, to that roadmap. How are we going to get to that 9.9 million new jobs? The last thing is, in your report, we want to hear about the outcomes, value for money, not the output. We can talk about the output, but that's not our main interest. Our main interest is the outcome, value for money. The last thing that we want to see is the capacity building program. We no longer want to hear there's no capacity, there are no skills. We just want to hear about how you are going to build your own internal capacity and reduce usage of consultants. Because government, we have one government in South Africa. We can't have LED officers that have got no work to do. And then we have SIDA using consultants, and then we have the department saying we don't have the capacity. If you have more than 300 municipalities, it means you have more than 300 extra people that you can work with. And SMMEs and cooperatives are more about community development. Even the funding model that we're talking about should take into consideration that there are organized structures in the community, and those people do not default. When you borrow money from a stock firm, you can't get a defaulter in a stock firm. We wonder as to why the approach is using intermediaries as opposed to using what people are actually used to, because you are building on what they know better. And that is what development is about. Community development is about modifying what people know better and empower them to do it in a professional way. So I will end the meeting here and thank both chairpersons of the board. We appreciate very much when you are here and leading your organization, because we know that you'll get first-hand information from us, and then you'll go back and exercise your role of governance and shaping the organizations that you lead to actually respond to what Parliament would want to see happening. We also appreciate that you bring both the accounting official, which is the CEO, and the CFO. That is very, very important. because it would then not raise unnecessary red lights to say, why now the CFO doesn't come and only the CEO comes? Thank you very much. I declare the meeting closed.